Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Jim Mars and also your surveillance stories. So get ready on Coast to Coast AM. So, Jim, do you think we can put our foot down and say enough is enough, folks? We don't want these cameras. We don't want this happening. Or is it going to happen anyway?
No, I think the thing we have working for us is that there's more of us than there are of them. If we just wise up and shake off our zombie-fied state and just say, no, we're not going to do this. Don't do this. And I would also encourage everyone to get to know your local people, your local sheriff, your local police officers. I was a police reporter for, I don't know, a dozen years. I rode with them, I ate with them, and, you know, and there's nobody in the world that has a greater respect for law enforcement than myself, but they're being misused, okay? I go back again to the days of the old Republic when I was growing up, and we were always taught the policeman was your friend. You know, if you have a problem, go find a policeman. He'll help you out. And I began to notice that all that was changing. And then I know by the 90s, when I had two young girls, we'd be driving down the road and they'd say, watch out, there's a cop. You know, where did we get this attitude? And it's not because of the police officers themselves. Like I said, I know that they are. Most police officers are in that job. It's a tough job. And they're there not really for the money or the prestige or the power. They're there because most of them want to serve their community. Well, guys, you know, you're not serving the community if you're violating the Constitution of the United States or the Constitution of your own state. So we need to band together. We need to become Americans again. Think of the difference in attitude after Pearl Harbor when Franklin Roosevelt came on the radio waves and said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. Let's buckle down. Let's get the job done. And we did. The greatest generation. Okay, today, listen to them. Oh, be fearful. Oh, watch out. Oh, there's this. Oh, gosh. Fear-mongering. It's the name of the game today. And let's just don't go for it. Okay? Let's go back to being free Americans. What we can all agree on is that we're Americans, we're all living in the same country, and we all want the same thing, which is just peace and happiness and progress for our families. And that's for everybody, okay? So let's just start thinking about what's going on. And when we see these plans like, well, let's turn Walmart shoppers into spies, let's just all say, no, we're not going to do that.
All right. To the phones we go. Phil, truck driving in California. We'll take you first, Phil. Go ahead.
Well, George, Larry, and Mr. Mars, it's an honor to be speaking with you.
Thank you.
I drive a truck, and my company, to get a deal on insurance, has installed a camera right in the window of the truck. That one side of it has got a camera that points at me. The other side points out at the road, and it's a smart camera. It's even called a smart drive, and it knows when I am yawning, smoking, wearing or not wearing my seatbelt, and God knows what all else.
Holy cow. Big Brother is watching you.
Everywhere.
Yeah, literally.
And you get that discount.
That's the most important part. Need to save that money.
Now, who gets the discount? You
the company,
or
the
your
company.
The company, of course. Yeah. And this is controlled through the monetary system. You know, if you do this, we'll reward you. You get more money. And so money has become that's the key to everything. But let me ask you, is it worth that extra money to know that they're watching your every move and not treating you as a responsible adult?
It feels kind of, it really feels like I'm not being treated as an adult.
No.
I don't know how much they save. I really don't. And I suspect that they do anything. My safety director, it's a small company, about 40 trucks or so. And whatever they say, he's on top of it. Yes, sir.
All right, great. Thanks, Phil, for updating us on that. What about FEMA camps, Jim? What do you hear about that?
Well, they're there, and they're just waiting some leader's signature to round up everybody. And again, when you make everybody fearful and suspicious of their neighbors and the people in their community, then it's going to be easy enough to say, well, oh boy, over there, George Norrie, you got to watch him. He had a radio program. He talked about things that were not to the benefit of the state. And so we're going to have to round him up as a potential terrorist. And people are going to be so fearful that they're going to go, yeah, well, okay, anything to protect us. And, of course, every time I hear this thing about, you know, we have to protect you, all I can think of is the words of Benjamin Franklin, who said those who give up their liberty for the promise of security deserve neither.
And he's so right. Ray is in Bellingham, Washington, and you're on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ray, go ahead.
Hey, how y'all doing? I'm on my speakerphone. Is that okay?
And so far, you sound okay. Go ahead.
Okay, on the subject of these FEMA camps, I've been around the country a couple times, and I traveled a lot, you know, just seeing the country and did a lot of hitchhiking. And I've seen a lot of these FEMA camps. They're surrounded by hurricane fences with razor wire around the top. And to me, these are concentration camps. They are not FEMA camps. They have one in West Seattle, it's in West Magnolia in Seattle. It's an abandoned elementary school. They boarded up all the windows, and before they could board up all the windows on the top floor, you could see in and see that the rooms were full of bunk beds. But the courtyard out back has razor wire around the top. These are concentration camps where I'm pretty sure when you go in, you will not come back out. And when it comes to Hitler was infatuated about the Aryan race. He wanted to bring about the extinct Aryan race who were pure blonde-haired, blue-eyed. Okay, and thanks a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Kind of leaves out most of the rest of us, doesn't it? Well, hey, George, let me tell you something. It's not just specially built camps. For one thing, there's a whole number of former military installations all around the country that ostensibly have been closed down, and yet actually they're still being maintained. Fort Chaffee, Arkansas is one such. And all they have to do, they've got a caretaker crew there that kind of keeps it up. The fencing is still there. The barracks are still there. It's no problem just to move people there. And, of course, they tell us, well, this is in a case of emergency, and that's always nice to know that maybe there's somebody. But then it even spreads further. In my book, The Trillion-Dollar Conspiracy, I point out that at a state fairgrounds in Caroline County in Virginia have been, and this is just the state where they have the state fair, but it's been designated as an emergency shelter in any emergency requiring a mass evacuation. It's a 360-acre site, and this whole thing is the result of a deal between the state fair of Virginia and the Virginia Department of Emergency Management. And under this agreement, this state fairgrounds is required to have a kitchen capable of preparing up to 6,500 meals a day and restrooms that can accommodate more than 2,200 people with backup generator and 10 acres of parking lot suitable for emergency response operations. Now, that, on the one hand, that sounds pretty good if there's a huge hurricane or a tornado or something like that. But then on the other hand, think how easy it would be to just turn that into a camp.
Absolutely. And as you said, they've been popping up all over the place. I think we first started getting word about these about 7-8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe even farther back.
Yeah, that's and cool. I was talking about it back then, and they said, oh, you know, there's no such thing. Well, yes, there is.
Let's go to James in Visalia, California. Go ahead, James. Thanks for holding.
Yes, first of all, it's great to meet both of you guys. I've never talked on radio shows, so please forgive me.
Sure thing.
Okay, my question actually has to do with the ancient astronaut theory. I'm a strong believer in that. I think that the Illuminati that runs the world now is actually being run either in cohort or by off-world, not only Anunnaki, but probably other alien races. My question is that whenever you're trying to describe this to people, Regretfully, you're kind of left with stitching whenever it comes to proof. I've downloaded tons of material whenever it comes to the Sumerians. But whenever it actually comes to proving where the gold was being taken, the Nibiru was another planet. And whenever, the exact documentation where it says that they were spring the gold into the atmosphere.
That's right.
Do you know? Do you know where that actual where that passage is? Or because it's not in like Attica Heath. It's not in
it's in the Sumerian tablets and texts that Zechariah Sitchin interpreted. I haven't read them because I can't.
Of course. But what I've come to understand is that there's a lot of them that have actually been downloaded onto a website that specializes in Sumerian texts, and I've downloaded a lot of them. I've read almost all of them. And the only things I haven't been able to find so that I could actually show to people that this isn't just Zacharias Stitson's theory, but, you know, here's the proof, here's the Sumerian text for yourself, read it for yourself, and then judge it. Those are the only two proponents of the theory that I haven't been able to find.
Let me recommend for you, James, his first book, The 12th Planet.
Mm-hmm.
He has a lot of that there, and he puts a lot of reference points in there. What is, Jim Mars, the alien agenda?
Well, let me just point out that I kind of feel for the caller because I, too, at one point felt like, well, you know, all this goes back to Zechariah Sitchin. You know, rest his soul. He passed away here just recently.
Yep.
And but actually, in researching that, because I cover the whole story of the Anunnaki, how they came to Earth, how they colonized, all this is written down thousands of years, even before the Bible was written down. And I think the only thing that, first I wanted to point out, there are others who can translate Sumerian. And although there are some controversies and arguments over some particular translations and interpretations, I have not seen anyone who has translated those same tablets who come to and see any great, huge difference between Sitchin. So it's not just one person. There's all the scholars say that, yes, this is what they talk about. What happened was up until the time of Sitchin, in fact, you can go to the Encyclopedia Britannica and you can find the whole story of the Anunnaki, Enki, Enlil, the whole thing, the whole gang, and yet they just simply say this was the Sumerian mythology. So all that's happened is, since Sitchin, is that the interpretation has shifted somewhat from, well, those poor people, they were just making up these stories about their gods, to a growing number of scholars who are saying, hey, they were writing down what they knew was going to happen and what was happening and what had happened in their past. I'd also like to point out that the idea of using gold to repair your atmosphere is not relegated to Sumerian tablets, but Dr. Edward Teller, who is called the father of the hydrogen bomb, proposed some years back that when people began to be concerned with the growing holes in our ozone layer, he said, well, perhaps we could put pulverized heavy metal particles such as gold to seal off these ozone holes and to reflect deadly ultraviolet rays from the sun back into space and try to keep the damage to the Earth to a minimum. So this has actually been proposed by reputable scientists in modern times.
Okay, thank you for that, Jim. Let's go to Leanne in Coleman, Alabama. Hi, Leanne, go ahead.
Hi, George. Well, one of the other callers already kind of touched on what I was going to talk about, but I'm going to go ahead and ask.
Sure.
There was a show on the History Channel a few weeks ago. I think it was called The Conspiracy Theory, and it was about these FEMA camps. And, I mean, I've heard of them, you know, popping up all over the place. And, you know, I'm in Alabama, and there's even one in Georgia now, too. And from what they were saying, if I'm not mistaken, is, you know, that Obama could possibly declare some type of national emergency in 2012, so there would be no elections. And if, you know, and if we're under martial law, I mean, could they come with guns drawn to our houses and take us to these places? I mean, what's your take on that?
Well, number one, it hasn't happened yet. And number two, I'm not going to try to pin it strictly to Barack Hussein Obama, because all this was groundwork that was laid years ago under plans that actually go back even to the Reagan years. The point is that these camps do exist. The laws and the regulations and policies that said, yes, people can be rounded up and sent to those camps, it's all in place. It just simply hasn't happened quite yet. But people need to be aware that it's very real and that there's a very real possibility. And again, we're back to the use of these camps. If there is, for instance, you say you're in Georgia, if there's some sort of a hurricane, some sort of widespread devastation in Georgia, then it might be a really good thing that they have a place that people can go to, get food and shelter. But when you have all this laying there, all it would take is for some despotic leader to say, well, you know, they want to throw me out, and I don't want to go, so we're just going to round up all these dissidents. We'll put them in a camp. And the mechanism for that is in place.
All right. Next up, we go to Chuck in Dade City, Florida. It's your turn on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Chuck.
Good morning, gentlemen. It's always fun to listen to you guys and hear a little bit of the truth from the way things used to be, the way they were supposed to be. And I have kind of an example here of one of the freedoms that's currently being eroded in my life, and that has to do with my birth certificate. Back when I moved out of the house many years ago, when I was 18 years old, my ma handed me my original birth certificate, and I have used that successfully throughout all the years in between to do everything that I need to do when I need to show identification. And guess what? A couple months from now, when I go to renew my driver's license, that one is going to be no good. And I have to go back to the state where I was born and pay $20 to get a new one that's got a raised seal on it. So I'll just kind of see what you guys have to say about that. And it seems pretty tyrannical to me. So I'll listen on the radio to see what you guys have to say. Thank you.
All right, Jim. All right. We only got about a minute or so before the break here, Jim. But, you know, these driver's license and these issues here, are they should be streamlined, but they're not, Jim.
No, they're not. Besides that, it says a driver's license. If you're not driving, why do you need one? And yet, let's face it, today, the way things are, the police can stop you on the street, demand to see your driver's license, and if you either refuse to show it or you don't have one, they can arrest you, even though you're just walking along. People, do you call this freedom? I'm sorry. We need to start rethinking what's going on, and we need to put our foot down.
Well, but can we? That's the big question. Stick with us. We're going to continue with Jim Marrs, whose website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll come back and take final phone calls right here on Coast to Coast AM, and I'll tell you in just a second what's on store for tomorrow night's show. We'll be back. Indeed, on our next Coast to Coast program, Len Kasten joins us as we talk about the secret history of extraterrestrials, advanced technology as well. Fascinating program in store for you. And when we come back, let's take some final calls with Jim Marrs on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We got Jim Marrs. We're going to take your phone calls as well. Let's go right to the calls. Tom is in Plano, Texas. There you go, Tom. You're up with us on Coast to Coast.
Hey, guys. Great show, man.
Hi. Thanks, Tom.
Hey, I've worked in the IT capacity for police departments for the past couple of years. And all the surveillance stuff, it's all federal grants, every bit of it. But one thing that you didn't touch on, what they're doing now is they have license plate scanners, and they have cameras in the car, and they can literally capture license plates at 70 miles an hour coming towards them and from behind, and it's all GPS. They can drive through a parking lot and capture every license plate. Like I always say, they upload it to the mothership, and then they data mine the stuff. So they can drive through, you know, neighborhoods or crack neighborhoods. Of course, illegal profiling or, you know, profiling is illegal, but, you know, that's what they can do with this stuff.
That's true. Let me ask you a question. Do I understand that you can, when they scan those license plates, that the new license plates now are carrying RFID information? So not only do they find out if you may be wanted, if there's a warrant out for you, but they can also tell if you don't have current insurance.
Well, what they're doing now, they're not doing the insurance part. I'm sure that's coming, but it's not the radio stuff. It's just recognition. They can actually, digitally recognize the plate.
Right.
So it's not the RF stuff. But
well, I think
everybody has a toll tag.
Right. And by the way, I had a friend who went down, took a little toll way to get into Austin, Texas, and the toll was like not very much, 75 cents, maybe a dollar. And what they're doing now is that you don't have to pay toll at the time. The scanners read your license plates, and then at some point, a few weeks later, you get a bill in the mail. But
with my friend,
she somehow missed the letter. It didn't get to her. And the next thing she knew, it was a year later, and her 75-cent toll had been tacked on to fines, and they told her she owed $350.
Jeez.
This, again, is just, number one, not only control but revenue gathering. But you hit the key thing there, is that this is all being generated at the level of the federal government. This is not your local elected sheriff deciding to do this. This is not your local friendly police chief or your community officers. This is being foisted off on us by these people in Washington who are now totally under the control of, for want of a better expression, the New World Order globalists. And it's part of their population control program that they're speeding up, as George and I talked about earlier.
And it's happening faster and faster and faster. We'll go to Jim Anonymous. He's not telling us where he is. We'll find out why. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi, how you doing, George? How you doing, James?
Good.
Howdy.
Well, I'm not going to say where I'm at right now. I will say I'm in Texas, but that's about all I'm going to say. I am currently undergoing legal issues in regards to a personal medical marijuana garden. I am a type 2 diabetic. I have talked to the show on several occasions, but I have been observing the legal system, and this isn't even talking about my specific case. As I go into court time again and time again, just to hear postponement, you know, I'm on a felony bond, which means I have to go in for weekly urinalysis, but that's all pointless. What I'm seeing is the DAs and a lot of lawyers that work with the individual counties, and they are basically creating a police society. I have watched 200 people over the last 6 months plead guilty, waive their constitutional rights, let the judge and the DA set sentence, be judge and jury. And I have heard that no one in my particular town has gone to court and actually been prosecuted by a jury of their peers and found guilty or not guilty, except for maybe two or three times in the past year or so.
And that makes a complete mockery out of our whole legal system and the idea that you're innocent until proven guilty and that you have these certain rights. And the thing that really kills me is that in the Constitution of the United States, there is supposed to be equal punishments across the board. So you're in Texas and you're having to spend who knows how many tons of money, and you have to hire lawyers, and you have to fight this thing because you were trying to grow some pot. Now, if you live in California or Colorado, you could go down to the medical marijuana store and take your pick, go home, and do your thing. That's not equal, folks. This is insane is what this is, and we've got to start waking up, and you got to wake up your neighbors, you got to wake up your family, and you got to start telling people this is not right.
Well, and it's not right, sir. The thing is that the night that I was arrested, I cooperated. I allowed the police into my home to protect my children and my wife, okay? I allowed them to come in. I was not read my rights, until approximately 6 hours later, right before they put me into lockup. Okay? Your constitutional rights don't mean a thing anymore. They really do not. You know, they say that there is no such thing as a medical marijuana defense in the state of Texas. I said it's a mockery. I was going to get in touch with Tommy later this week. I'm going to give him some contacts and some information. People like Stephen Hague and Stephen Betson from the Texas Coalition for Compassionate Care, as well as the local chapters of Normal. This is a complete mockery of our justice system. I grew up around Washington, D.C. I had a top secret security clearance. I've been in the Pentagon. I've been in the White House. I've been at Camp David. I'm a veteran. You know, veterans in 14, 15 other states have rights to access to medical marijuana. But because I moved to Texas before my neuropathy kicked in and made the decision that I wasn't going to frequent a cartel or purchase through the illegal system or support Al-Qaeda, I made the decision to grow it in my own home, which is paid for. No one owns my home but me. Okay?
What part of pursuit of happiness do they not understand? It's all totally insane. We have to do some major restructurings here, and what it all comes down to, and I think you'll agree with me, this isn't about you, and it's not about you wanting to have some medical marijuana. This is about revenue gathering. Everybody along the chain is making money off of your problem and your hassle. It's not right. Some years ago, I had a good friend of mine from high school that became the chief legal advisor for the Texas Department of Corrections, the prison system. She told me that almost 90% of the inmates are in there on drug charges. 90%. And Texas has one of the highest prison populations in the nation. Now, what's wrong with this picture? We're not using our common sense anymore. We're not even going by the rule of law anymore. It's money talks, and that's it.
All right. Terry is in Denver, Colorado. Go ahead, Terry. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hello, Jim. Hello, George.
Hi, Terry.
We have the caller earlier was explaining exactly what's going on in Denver here. This went mainstream today. They actually have been setting up stings with decoy prostitutes, arresting people, seizing their vehicles, and most of these people have been getting off through a jury. And then they turn around and impose fees that are ridiculous in the thousands of dollars. And if they don't pay them, they turn around and sell their vehicles. And this is the DA. And as this gentleman earlier in Texas was saying, it's the same exact thing. It's a seizure of the law. These people are renegades.
Well, it comes back again to the insanity of drug prohibition. It only took our great-grandmothers and great-grandfathers a little over 10 years to figure out that alcohol prohibition was not only not working, it was creating a worse problem than the alcohol. We've been under drug prohibition now for more than 30 years, and we still can't quite seem to get the message that you can't go around telling people how to live. Now, you can prosecute people if they commit a crime. There are crimes about driving under the influence, okay, but to be setting people up and to be taking their property, in my book, The $1 trillion Conspiracy, I have a whole section on this asset forfeiture, which is just getting out of hand. And here's how insane it is. If you have a friend that comes to your house and leaves a marijuana cigarette behind and somehow the cops find out and they come in and they bust you and they find that drug, they can take your house, okay? And yet, if that same smoker goes and rents a room at the Hilton Inn and the cops come in and find him in there smoking dope, do they seize the Hilton Hotel? No. It's all about money, power, and public control. And until we wake up and wake up all the people around us, it's going to get worse because as the economic situation continues to deteriorate and every little government entity from Washington all the way down to your little small towns, they are hurting for money, so they're desperately looking for ways to make more money, and this is what it's going to lead to. I have a friend that worked for a County Sheriff's Department in Texas in file management. And they have been ordered to go back and cull through the files and find people who had outstanding parking tickets from maybe 5-10 years back, and they issued a warrant on them. So they can go out, grab them, and of course then it's a question of simply paying money to get out from the clutches of this so-called law enforcement.
Okay, and you're right, Jim. You're right. Let's go to Kay in Los Angeles. Hi, Kay. Go ahead.
Hello, this is Bernice. You hear me?
Bernice, but you ended up being Kay on my computer for some reason. But
but anyway, there's something going on in L.A. County District Court right now. There is a mentally challenged student who was filming the police abusing a student. He's locked up in jail with adult criminals because he taped it with his camera phone. And they said if he pleads guilty, they will give him only 32 months and charge him with obstruction of justice, resisting arrest, criminal threats, and attempt lynching for videotaping the police, the school police, LA Unified, for videotaping.
I've heard a lot of that, Jim, that if you're seen videotaping out there in the public, they come after you. Is that true?
Right. Yeah, it's absolutely true. That's another issue that I cover in my book, The $1 Trillion Conspiracy. And let's see if we get this right, okay? If you use your cell phone or a digital camera and you tape the police carrying out their duties in a public place, you're subject to arrest, jail, and fine. And yet the police can stick up cameras everywhere, and they can videotape you 24/7, and, that's for your protection. It's not right. It's inequitable. This is totally an anathema to a free society.
Yeah, absolutely. Next up, we go to Roy in Marion, North Carolina. Go ahead, Roy. Thanks to Jim Mars and his comments. Go ahead.
All right. Mr. Mars, you are a big hero. I think you gave Gene Hill, Lady in Red, her life back, Beverly Oliver, Abraham Bolton. I think you're the encyclopedia of the JFK assassination. I think that if we can straighten that out, it would go worlds toward fixing all our problems. And I think that might be about to happen because there's been a couple apology books lately. Have you seen the service details book? It's just a total nothing.
Right. Well, here, you have to understand. See, in fact, brace yourself. Everyone's listening, just brace yourself, because in 2013, in just a couple of years down the road, it will be the 50th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination.
Yep.
And now there is so much information out there that brings out the truth of the matter, brings out the people involved, the connections, the things that were happening, the total lack of a real investigation. All right? But you hadn't watched. Come 2013, they will have the networks and cables. They're going to have all kinds of programs proving once again that Lee Harvey Oswald did it all by himself. And it's not going to convince anyone, but what it's going to do is continue to confuse the issue, which has been the method of cover-up in the John F. Kennedy assassination. Not that there's ever been a true cover-up in that there's a lack of evidence, but there is so much obfuscation, charging, countercharge, claim and counterclaim, that it just keeps most people off balance and confused, and they just finally shake their head and they say, "Well, I don't want to hear any more about that." And that's a cover-up, and that's how they've kept the murder of a president of the United States under wraps for going on 50 years.
And you know, you keep thinking of what Lee Harvey Oswald said when he was being escorted. I'm a patsy.
That's right. He says, "I didn't shoot anyone. I'm just a patsy." And by the way, George, that was captured on sound and film and has been subjected to voice stress analysis, which can be used as evidence in a court. And it showed no stress in his voice, which indicates he was telling the truth.
That is amazing. That's a great story all by itself. Joe's in Seal Beach, California. Let's get you in here, Joe. Go ahead.
Hi, Jim and George. I'm just reading $1 Trillion Conspiracy now, and it's great. And I was just wondering what your thoughts are on, I'm noticing more films and music performances and recordings by big companies are incorporating a lot of symbology that's ancient esoteric symbology. Does that have any relation to brainwashing techniques from the CIA?
Oh, boy, does it. Of course it does. That's exactly what it is. It's brainwashing. And then you have to go back and realize who owns the five corporations that determine everything you see and hear. And I'm not just talking about news. I'm talking about music, the music companies. I'm talking about satellite, movies, films, TV, cable, networks, magazines, books, billboards. Everything you see and hear is under the control of about one of five corporations. And that is a tremendous concentration of power. And the owners of those corporations now are the ones who determine our whole worldview and our whole outlook on life. Could this be part of the problem?
But we've got Twitter and Facebook now, Jimmy.
I know. Don't you love it, George? Don't you love it? I run into people because of the subjects I deal with. I run into so many people who are so concerned about the National Security Agency eavesdropping on their telephone or spying on them. That's something we've been talking about this whole program. But hey, they've got it easy. All they got to do is go on Facebook. They'll find out everything they want.
Absolutely,
to know about everybody.
Yeah. People tell everything about themselves. Jim, I want to thank you for being on the program. Keep in touch with us, okay, my friend?
Will do, and thank you very much.
You too, and you have a great holiday, a wonderful, joyous Christmas as well. Don't forget, Christmas Eve, we'll have a live show for you Friday night and a live show for you on Christmas night as well. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.